Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking. Well, hello, good evening, and welcome. I'm Alec Hogg, and this is the Biz News Briefing. In tonight's program, we'll hear about the deal of the day, a 5 billion rand transaction between Sanlam exiting its active managed business, that's asset management, by taking 12% of the equity in 91. So everybody's working for these Sanlam active managed funds at the moment, unit trusts and so on, is going to be working for 91 in future. 400 billion rands in assets that are transferring across. Also, we're going to hear more about what's going on in Russia with the breaking news just to hand now from our partners at the Financial Times. Ukraine has shot British Storm Shadow missiles into Russia. So escalation continuing there. We'll hear from Piet Viljoen on how to manage your portfolios in these times of great troubles. And then there'll be a little bit on vaccine hesitancy and the NVIDIA results. So plenty for you coming up. I say plenty for you. It's all the news that actually matters in context. On the JSE today, a firmer session with the top 40 up by just under 1%. Similarly, resources, industrials 0.75% better and financials 1.25% higher. The Rand lost 5 cents, not surprisingly, given what's happening in the international arena right now. 18 Rand 13 against the dollar, 7 cents worse against the pound, 22 Rand 92. And by the same token, the hedge assets hedge against war. Bitcoin up to another fresh high, $94,858 for a single Bitcoin. That's up by 2.3% today. Gold, the gold price was 0.33% higher at $2,641.95. Oh, if only we were still major gold producers, but we're pretty much nowhere. As far as the major share price moving news happened today, well, mentioned to you in the headlines, it's Sanlam has sold its active management asset business for 12.3% of the equity of 91. The market thought Sanlam had done a bad deal, down 0.5%, 91 a good deal, up 3%. Lesaka is buying a company called Recharger, which operates about 450,000 subscribers in its prepaid electricity. That's a 507 million rand deal. Lesaka, which is in the Biz News portfolio, up 4.3% today. PrimeServe came out with half year results. That share price up by 8.25%. And RFG, the old Rainbow Chickens. This is the Rhodes Food Group, not Rainbow Chickens. Rhodes Food Group up 7.9% after it declared a 79% higher dividend and headline earnings up 18%. That's for the financial year to end September. New highs, We Buy Cars, nearly 5% higher again, 41.97. PPC has been in the news this week, up 6.75% at 4.43. Pick and Pay just keeps going higher, almost 4% every day. It was back there, 4.5% today, new high for the last 12 months of 30.12. And there's Fashini Group, TFG it's called, up 3.75% at 167.28. New lows, Metair down 3% to 10.01. And Bytes, which was spun off from Altron, 99 rand, that was down 1.75%. Well, our top story for today is the story which we've already discussed a moment ago, Sanlam selling its active managed asset business to 91 in exchange for 12.3% of 91's equity. Sean Pesch is an active manager who's worked in South Africa and in the UK. I caught up with him earlier to get his insights. Well, Hendrik de Toey, the man who founded the company now called 91 with a secretary and a briefcase back in 1991, of course, today released interim results. And there was a surprise. The surprise is that Sanlam is going to be handing over its staff and 400 billion rand portfolio of assets in South Africa, which are actively managed to 91 to look after. Sean Pesch, the founder of Randmore, a South African who is based abroad but knows all about what's going on in the South African asset management industry, because that's where he started off. Sean, I mean, when you began in asset management, was this even conceivable that Sanlam, the mighty Sanlam, would be saying, well, we can't do active management anymore. Oh, here's these little guys, as they went, then were at Investec, which became 91. Let's give it to them to handle for us.
It's quite a story, Alec. And, you know, just looking at Investec, I've never met Hendrik du Toit. But boy, what a business he's created. What an amazing businessman. I mean, he really is. And if you just think that when he started in 91, I was at university. Okay. So it wasn't that long ago. And now he's built up a business at the end of last quarter, £127 billion. You know, I mean, that is a serious amount of rands. It's during my lifetime, not just my lifetime, you know, my sort of adulthood. So it's a remarkable achievement. It really is. And to think that he's done that since 91 and Sanlam since 1918 has accumulated 400 billion rand. So, which is what, 12% or so, 13% of Investec's assets. So quite something, and full marks to an incredible achievement to him and his team.
Well, I'll give you a little more detail because I did listen to the press discussion that the two of them had, the two being Hendrik du Toit and the Sanlam chief executive, Paul Hanratty, who in your time in South Africa, I think worked for Old Mutual, which is also like weird for someone from Old Mutual as the MD there to become the MD of Sanlam. But that's the world we live in today. Hendrik said that the assets under management in Rand terms at 91 are 3.3 trillion Rand. And you're adding another 400 billion from Sanlam, which will take it then to 3.7 trillion. Very easy. The deal, if I work out the market cap, because the way it's going to work is that 91 will be giving shares worth about 12% of its equity to Sanlam. That's 4 billion, but Hanratty told us, no, it was closer to 5 billion rand. So the deal is closer to 5 billion rand. All those people who currently work for Sanlam in the active management area, running unit trusts and so on, have now moved over, or will be moving over to 91, provided the authorities give it the stamp of approval, which everybody seems to think it will. And Sanlam will be left with 800 billion rand in assets in just passive and multi-managers. So they really are abdicating or moving out of the field that you're in. So it shows just how difficult active management is.
Yeah, it's been very difficult, Alec, and even more difficult for a value investor because value investing has been a tough place to be during a period of quantitative easing, mainly with lower interest rates. But it has been difficult, and it looks to me like he's getting a good deal. You know, paying 1% of assets under management, I think, I don't know what their average fee is, but that's for actively managed. And I'm sure there's some synergies and cost cutting that they could do and streamlining of funds and mandates. So I would be surprised if it wasn't earnings accretive.
All right. So you've said a lot there, which I think many people watching this show are going to say, what's he talking about now? Earnings accretive. What exactly does that mean?
Well, I mean, you think about the synergies, you know, if they've each got a European fund. Well, we don't need to run two European funds. Let's merge them. That means you're paying one portfolio manager or two portfolio managers. You're cutting the number of Bloomberg's terminals and all the rest. So there are lots of cost savings, I would imagine, to be had from this. You know, you don't have to streamline the office space and all of that sort of thing. So there would definitely be some synergies. And Hendrik's a very smart guy. I mean, the smart guys on both sides of the table. So it's, I think it's good for Sanlam that they didn't just sell for cash or anything like that. And they've got a share of the action. And as they grow, they'll be able to benefit as well.
Hendrik did mention that there had been an outflow of 100 billion rand from their portfolios in the past 6 months. We had in Coronation's results yesterday an outflow of 50 billion rand. Coronation's much smaller than 91. But that does tell you that there's some pressure. So they lose 100 billion rand, but they're getting in 400 billion. There aren't too many Sanlam deals to be done, I presume, that they'll be able to keep adding assets in this way. And isn't that how these big companies make money? By having lots of assets to manage.
Yeah, that's right. So that's the outflows. Thankfully, markets have been going up, so your assets have actually gone up. Okay, your assets obviously would have gone up more had nobody, you know, redeemed. But that is not unusual. I mean, a lot of the UK asset managers have experienced something similar as people migrate off to passives. But it'll come to a head. It'll come to a head when everybody thinks that that passives are the answer. When everyone thinks growth investing is the answer, it's normally the time to not be a growth investor. When everybody thinks value investing is the answer, it's normally a time not to be a value investor. You know, and when everybody thinks passive investing is the answer, probably a time to not be a passive investor. So, you know, we'll have to see.
Isn't this a big vote of no confidence in active investment by Sanlam? They're keeping all their passives and they're actually ditching a very sizable business in active asset management. The part of the reason that Paul Hanratty gave was that, well, we don't really have access. We're not big enough to have access to the kind of research that 91 has. Now, think about my friend Sean Pesce at Ranmore, who's one of the top asset managers in the world. You don't have access to that research either, I presume.
I mean, we don't pay for broker research, any broker research. We do all the work ourselves. You know, we go back to, we'll talk about Alan Turner a second. And for each company, we will go back 10 years and get the annual reports and every line item. We want to know how have the line items of the cash flow statement, income statement, balance sheet changed over the last 10 years so we understand it. You know, so we don't pay for broker research. So, you know, that's fine, but it depends on what you think your edge is. In the old days, your edge would be knowing something that somebody else didn't know or the market didn't know. That's not really permitted anymore because of regulation, FD and all the rest. So you know, and even if you did know something that everybody else doesn't know, that's got to be the important thing. But I think our edge is doing the kind of detailed work, but also thinking differently. You know, when everybody's thinking one way, everyone's excited about the Trump trade and what Trump's going to do in the US and excited about US equities. You know, say, well, what's the other side of the coin? What's the second level thinking here? So that's probably, it's how you think and how you approach investing. And that's the edge and that works for us.
We got a note from Corky Koyman, a regular contributor on BizNews, to say that it's got nothing to do with Denker Capital, even though Denker is part of the greater Sanlam family. They will continue as Denker Capital, got nothing to do with 91. And it was interesting, you might have picked up there that Sean mentioned Palantir. Well, we've got two premieres for you tonight. At 7 o'clock tonight, Sean has taken a deep dive into Palantir, the top-performing stock in the BizNews portfolios, our model portfolios. We bought it at $8. It's now sitting at over $60. And he had a look at it because I asked him to please have a look and tell us, help us, Mr. Wiseman, on whether we should be selling the stock now, given all the craziness that's going on around the world. And we're going to get more of that in just one moment. Anyway, Sean will be coming up at 7 o'clock tonight, that premiere on the BizNews channel on YouTube. And at 8 o'clock tonight, you'll have a masterclass in investment from Piet Viljoen. More of that later. Let's go on to the big story that's breaking right now in Russia. And a little bit of background from our partners at the Financial Times of London. The FT News Briefing's host, Sonia Hudson, spoke to Chris Miller, who covers Ukraine for the FT.
Ukraine has hit Russia with U.S.-made long-range missiles for the first time. That's according to Ukrainian officials. The U.S. lifted restrictions on their use last week. It was a huge policy shift. Here to talk about the escalation is the FT's Chris Miller. What do we know about these strikes that Ukraine launched on Russia?
We don't know a whole lot, except for the fact that Ukraine launched this first initial strike using American-provided weapons against a Russian ammunition depot in the Bryansk region. This is a region that's not too far away from the Kursk region, where Ukraine holds about 600 square kilometers of territory that it's really trying to hold on to while Russia's trying to push it out of that territory.
Now, I mentioned just the fact that the U.S. is allowing Ukraine to do this was a big policy shift. What does this mean for the war itself? Is this a turning point?
You know, it's certainly a turning point in terms of American policy. However, you know, analysts that I speak with, even Ukrainian military officials here say, you know, this isn't going to be a silver bullet for us. It's not going to completely turn the tide of the war in our favor, but it will hopefully have an impact on the battlefield, particularly around potentially this region of Kursk, where the Russians are trying to push out the Ukrainians who are holding territory there that they captured back in August.
Do you think that this will prompt European countries to allow Ukraine to launch their missiles into Russian territory?
So the United Kingdom and France have both provided long-range weapons to Ukraine, and they have signaled that they would allow the Ukrainians to use these missiles inside of Russia, but they haven't really given the green light for Ukraine to use them because they haven't really wanted to be out of step with Washington. So it could be that within the next days or weeks, we could see potentially the use of these British and French weapons inside of Russian territory. But right now, we haven't heard a direct decision made in London or Paris yet.
So as Ukraine starts to use these long-range missiles in Russia from the U.S., potentially from other countries as well, how is Russian President Vladimir Putin responding to that?
Well, Putin has responded by signing a decree lowering Moscow's potential threshold for using nuclear weapons, while his foreign minister, Sergei Lavrov, said that it's impossible to use these weapons inside of Russia without Washington's direct support. So they're saying that the U.S. and by extension NATO are now directly entering this war. But of course, we know that Russia has escalated long before Russia has brought more than 10,000 North Korean troops into the fight. It's also taken missiles from Iran. And so we are seeing the expansion of this war. Neither side really can continue the war at this pace with the casualties that they're sustaining, the resources that they're expending. And so we're seeing Russia's allies as well as Ukraine's allies deepen their support for each other's war efforts.
Chris Miller covers Ukraine for the FT.
Yeah, and Chris was on the money there. This late-breaking story that came just before we went on air is that Ukraine has launched those British Storm Shadow missiles into Russia. Why is this so important? Well, earlier in the week, you would have seen on the BizNews briefing how Clem Suntis said that this is one of the big flags for World War III, which he now puts the chances of happening at somewhere between 10 and 20%, which is a high risk indeed. Given that possibility of World War III, Donald Trump in the White House, I actually got six of these that I put to Pete Fullion earlier today. Elon Musk having such an important role, eccentric Elon Musk. Bitcoin getting to fresh records at $94,000, telling us something as well. Warren Buffett selling at an unprecedented level to build up cash. And, of course, here in South Africa, a still fragile government of national unity. Those are six big things that, if they go wrong, would surely hurt your investment portfolio. I asked Pete Fullion to give us some insights into this. And what transpired was a fantastic interview and a very in-depth discussion with one of South Africa's top money managers that premieres on BizNews at 8 o'clock tonight on BizNews TV. So get your coffee and settle in for that one. But here's Pete's direct response to my question about should we be changing our portfolios as a result of those big six developments.
So, something to talk about, but I don't think you can build your portfolio based on your view on these six. What you can do in terms of building portfolio is to make sure that you have a core of fantastic businesses that you will hold for the long term, however you define those. I have a certain set of criteria which I look at, but we can talk about that a bit later. A core of fantastic business which you'll hold for the long term. And for the long term, I mean the really long term. And you don't react to the ebb and flow of the market with that core of your portfolio. Because if you think back over the past 100 years, we've gone through two world wars, a Cold War, pandemics, all sorts of things, assassinations. In South Africa, we had apartheid, we had that going away, we had the new inclusive government coming in. All these things at the time seemed like massive events, but if you owned a good business throughout that whole period, it would have done fine. So I think that's the first thing that one has to realize, is that these things we like talking about, and I include under that banner things like interest rates and the GDP and all those sort of things and politics. These things we all love talking about, and everybody has a view on them, but they actually do not matter that much when you think about it. As long as you own a good business. I mean, look at, for instance, ShopRite over the past 20 years. In a very volatile time in South Africa's history, and a time when the economy didn't grow, the politicians were stealing, and so on and so forth, the business just carried on and grew and served more customers and delighted more customers and made more money for shareholders every year. And that's what you want in the core of your portfolio, as long as those assets are reasonably valued. Now, reasonable is a very wide, broad range. I don't think everything you own has to have a 2 PE. Some of the stuff you own, if it's a good business and goes up to a 20 or 25 PE, like in the Merchant West Investments Value Fund, we happen to own Capitec. We think it's on the expensive side of fair value, but it's not crazy. It's not mad. So we continue to own it. So that range in which you just hold a stock is a very wide range of valuation, in my opinion. Those good companies. And then you can tilt your portfolio. Once you've got that core established, you can then tilt your portfolio according to valuation where you see big disconnects happening. And I think the biggest disconnect in global markets that's developed over the past 15 years it's almost 20 years now, since the global financial crisis, is super low interest rates in the West and a massive buildup of debt as a result of that, and a misallocation of capital as a result of that. That, for me, is the biggest dislocation that's sitting there waiting to be corrected over the next 20 years. Because these things, again, they take a long time to play out.
Explain that, if you would, the misallocation of capital and why that's so important and why these super low interest rates would have caused it.
So when you have interest rates that are artificially depressed, like they were in Europe and the US due to the central bank intervention post the financial crisis to save the economy, so to speak, when capital is free, in other words, so very low interest rates mean capital is effectively free. And when you have free capital, capital tends to get misallocated. And I think that's what's been happening gradually over the past 15 to 20 years since the global financial crisis and the suppression of interest rates by Western central banks. If you look at the balance sheets of Western countries, as most European countries and the USA, you'll find that the debt levels relative to GDP, relative to government income, have just multiplied. They've gone up a lot. So I think that is the big imbalance in the global economy.
Yeah, well, I can tell you what, you are in for a treat at 8 o'clock tonight, Piet Viljoen, on how to structure your portfolio and sleep well despite what's happening all around the world. Well, on Wall Street, they're all waiting for NVIDIA's results. This is the go-go stock of the moment. Our partners at Bloomberg spoke to Melissa Otto. She's the head of TMT research at S&P. And the big focus area is the new Blackwell chip.
So the company has guided to several billion dollars in revenues in Q4 for Blackwell. Now, what's interesting is the expectations for next year. Currently, Visible Alpha Consensus is expecting $63 billion. in revenues from Blackwell. What's interesting about that number is it's moved up about 10% since last week. So clearly sentiment is improving around Blackwell. I'm just speaking to the data. Now, within that number, that $63 billion, there's a massive range of estimates. There are a cluster of bears out there below $25 billion in revenues, and there are a cluster of bulls that are clustered around $100 billion, giving us that consensus number of $63 billion.
You know, at the moment, the stock price is just a number, right? Because investors punished NVIDIA for having its revenue growth slow, and now we're at $150. Practically, we're at a record again. So where does this end? Like, at what point do we really see a peak for the stock price?
When global cloud cloud service providers stop spending billions and billions of dollars in CapEx, that's supporting their move to accelerated computing. And currently, we just don't see that slowing down at all in our data. That continues to ramp.
So it's a screaming buy then, Melissa?
I can't,
at any price, basically. Is what
I
you're
can't
saying.
Say that. I can just simply speak to the numbers.
Did you see the Bloomberg story that so we did the math and figured it'll be at least $1 trillion of spending on electric, so power generation, TMT networks, and the chips, obviously. And then Moody's, I think, looked at it and said, no, it's $2 trillion of spending in a five-year period. Are you going to come out and tell us it's three?
What I would say is that I think there are a lot of bull cases out there.
Yeah.
And we've seen a lot of innovation in the model, in the chip. But what we haven't seen is innovation at the application level. So it hasn't really changed the way that you and I engage with generative AI. It's not making a meaningful enhancement to productivity to my life at the moment. Now, will it? That's the question. That's potentially what drives the whole AI story higher. And when we see that innovation, that's time
to get
excited.
Hang on, you're not using AI?
Well, there we go. What a fascinating discussion there on NVIDIA. That's what's keeping the Wall Street guys in focus. Something else that's keeping people elsewhere in the world in focus is the growth in vaccine hesitancy, particularly after the vaccine skeptic RF Kennedy has been appointed to head the U.S. Department of Health. Sam Fazeli, who has a PhD in pharmacology, is director of research at Bloomberg Intelligence.
Gay Jr., I think you could go back about 20 years. A host on Bloomberg Radio recently, Paul Offit, who's, for me at least, one of the most respected vaccinologists around and is on the advisory committee, et cetera, for vaccinations. He, I think, had an interview with him or had a conversation with him about 20 years ago, after which there was a publication where his very strong, RFK Jr.'s very strong views were espoused. But generally, vaccine hesitancy, vaccine questions, as we all know, have been around like any other medicine, really, as soon as something is available. Right now, we have obesity drugs, and lots of people are questioning about obesity drugs. So any new product, any new technology that comes along, there are skeptics. And sometimes that's very useful because it pushes you to think it harder to make sure you have the data and the science backing the risk-benefit ratio. That is the critical element of any intervention that we do in our lives. Risk-benefit ratio. So,
is there any concept that this sentiment is on the rise? Or sort of what effect can we think that it has in terms of public health?
Yeah, there is evidence that the view of particularly parents with regards to childhood vaccinations is, in terms of negativity, is rising. And if you think back, we had that pseudoscientific paper that was published quite a long time ago suggesting that certain vaccines lead to autism, which was, of course, the study was flawed, the statistics were flawed, the analysis was flawed, and that's been proven over and over again.
Well, it's a lot of fake news in that area, and I urge you to just keep an open mind on it. And something else you can keep an open mind on is our premiere tonight at 7 o'clock. Here is a little taster from Sean Pesh on Palantir, the stock that's done so well for Biz News model portfolios.
Alexander Karp. What's Alexander doing? If you go to SEC filings 4144, you can see what they've been doing. Sold during the last 3 months. 18th of November, the Americans do it the other way around. 18th of November, put in a sale for a sold a million shares, got 64 million of proceeds. 15th of November, 4.5 million. In fact, I did this last night. There was another filing last night after I did this. Okay. In total, this is only going back to the 28th of October, 1.3 billion of sales. The CEO is selling every day. Okay. Every day. Follow the money.
Well, as I mentioned, that is going to be a premiere, one of two premieres tonight. CEO Alex Karp of Palantir, $1.3 billion in the last 3 months. He's been selling in the company while others have been buying. That's at 7 o'clock tonight. Piet Viljoen at 8 this evening. Until tomorrow from the team, cheerio. This BizNews briefing was brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move to expert currency and forex risk management.